This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Great music, great shows, great radio.
That's so Joy.
Radiothon 2014 is here. Have you sorted out your Joy membership?
Join your favourite shows as we celebrate a week of amazing radio and raise much needed funds to keep Joy out proud and loud.
We may be on air, but we don't run on air.
Your Joy membership supports the community with great radio, uplifting music, and benefits you personally with invites to member-only events and prizes all year round.
Sign up or renew today and you'll have the chance to win one of our major prizes, a total prize pool of $36,000 up for grabs.
That's so Joy.
Keep Australia's first and only LGBTI radio station on air. Call 1300-JOY-949 or visit joy.org.au.
Thanks to our Radiothon prize supporters, Mercedes-Benz Berwick.
Visit Craig Howard and his award-winning team at Mercedes-Benz Berwick. Only 23 minutes from the Burnley Tunnel. mbberwick.com.au.
Olivia Cruises.
Providing great cruise, resort and adventure vacations for lesbians. Visit olivia.com.
Oaks Hotels and Resorts.
Visit oakshotelsresorts.com.
Craig's Royal Hotel.
Experience the legend. Visit craigsroyal.com.au.
Velo Electric and Folding.
Melbourne's premier folding and electric bike shop. veloelectric.com.au.
1300 569 949 or joy.org.au. That's so Joy. Radiothon 2014.
That's so Joy!
What's your genre?
Well, in terms of genres, probably most accurately you'd say science fiction and horror, but ideally what I'm writing about is people. What most people like to read about is also people, but those two genres give you an opportunity to take a personality and then put them through a series of quite extreme or unusual situations, and you can see that personality peel back layer by layer, and you can find out, is our public persona all that we're made of, what we like to express ourselves to people as, or is there some sort of precious intrinsic core on the inside of everybody, something that's untouched by experiences, something that forms the basis of what then grows outward.
Okay, that's a lot. So I just thought, you know, Great Expectations just flowed on the page. Literally.
No,
or figuratively.
I tend to obsessively draft, and I can get caught in a doom spiral of eternal drafting. So
what does that mean, that you recreate everything again and again and again?
Well, what tends to happen is I'll lay down the bare bones, and then I'll go back and put in another draft, and I'll think, oh my God, this links to that, and that actually happened over there, and these people know each other. Right, I've got to go back and redraft it and put all of that in. And with every single redraft, there is more and more of that richness and density being layered into the text. So the first draft is pretty much an outline, an idea of how people got from A to B, and you build the journey and the experience from there. But there are a lot of people who can literally just sit down and, after having fermented the idea in their heads, just bang out the most incredible prose straight away with no practice. I'm not one of those people, sadly.
Okay, so how do you create the environment they're in? Because that's what we're talking about today, is you're an author. How do we create this journey? How do we create the space? How do we create the forward motion?
I find that it's there's a lot of talk about, okay, this writer wrote this thing and it's terrible, therefore this writer should be a terrible person. Generally what you do is you take a human connectedness to an environment. It could be an emotion you've experienced, it could be a taste, it could be a memory, and you present that to the audience in a way where they can then bring their experiences to the text. So you'll quite often find when people read something, they're bringing everything that they can connect and weave into the text to it and enriching it themselves, and you're sort of leading them on this journey through their own experiences and how they can relate to it, because people most enjoy the types of books that they can personally relate to. It gives them a sort of a very dense, rich, intense connection with it. And I quite often find one of my favourite compliments is people will write to me and say, were you writing about me? My goodness, that's me. That's exactly me. And I said, well, no, I don't write about anyone specific. I tend not to write too directly about real life, because I figure you could stand on the street corner and watch real life. But it's a big compliment insofar as you are supposed to feel like it's about you. You're supposed to feel it's incredibly personal.
Okay. So if you've got any questions about B.P. Gregory, famous author and person who takes us on a mind journey with every book, let us know. You can SMS us on 0427-JOY-949 or email on air at joy.org.au. Let us know what you're thinking. So, Bronwyn, your first book, mm-hmm. now that would have been a huge thing for you. Describe how that process went and describes the journey that you took the readers on.
It was a glorious experience of obsessive drafting. I have two archive boxes full of just drafts and drafts and drafts because I got caught in that loop of, I love doing this. I love the act of writing. I could potentially just do this forever.
Mm.
It was one of my first books that I ever wrote all the way through beginning to end was a bit of a love letter to Melbourne. It's actually a horror book.
A horrible love letter.
A horrible love letter, like most of them are when you read them later on. It's a horror story about a psychopath who lives on the outskirts of Melbourne and is commuting from sort of rural outskirts down on the peninsula.
Well, zone one commuting does create psychopaths out of average people, right?
But it's quite funny because at the point that I wrote it quite young. I started writing it around 14.
Oh.
And now having lived in the city for quite a period of time and seen some of the cracks in the facade, it's quite nice to go back and read it and think, oh, I was so young and starry-eyed. So, you know, I wrote this love letter to this incredible city and now I can see the city's a bit more like just an everyday person. It's like meeting someone famous. Mm. You think this person's going to be the most incredible person ever. They're a person. Mm. They're a person, the same as all of the other people that we know.
Mm. And they're just doing incredible things.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. So from that, you built a genre of books. They're mostly horror. Now, this is one of the things people like to read at various times, particularly when they're travelling. Now, I'm going to ask you, what is your favourite travel book? Not necessarily a book about travel, but a book you would read whilst travelling.
I have a dog-eared copy of Dune that my father bequeathed to me.
Oh, really? Classic.
I actually found that when my partner and I moved in together, we had between us 8 copies of Dune that we then had to cull down to a respectable number. But
8 copies?
Yeah. You can never have too many copies of Dune.
Yeah? Okay.
but I find that it's a good way to sort of escape your surroundings. So when you travel, and even when you go somewhere amazing and glamorous, there's always a few minutes where you're just waiting at the train station. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, your sandwich hasn't quite arrived yet at the cafe and people are beginning to wonder why you're just staring around at them vacantly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one for really sort of pulling out an iPhone and flipping through the apps as quickly as I can. So pulling a dog-eared book out of my bag and sort of taking myself out of that space and somewhere a bit more exciting is the way I tend to get around it.
Mm. Well, yeah, as a reader, commuting is a positive thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because it gives you that downtime, unless you've got to stand.
There's actually a lovely...
harrowing experience.
There's a collection of short stories that Cardigan Press put together, which consisted of stories that were of a perfect length for different types of travel.
Oh, really?
So the section at the front was for very short trips and then for medium commutes and then longer stories towards the back. And the idea was you pull out your copy of All Change, Please, and, okay, how long's my train trip? You just flip to whatever section gives you a story that's exactly that length and you sit down and enjoy yourself.
Oh, that's clever.
Well, I find that the biggest complaint that people have when they're commuting or travelling with a book is I had trouble following it because I was picking it up and putting it down a lot. So having something that's exactly the right length is, you know, that lovely Goldilocks and the Three Bears, the porridge was just right.
when you're creating stories, how do you figure in the environment that people are in? Because how do you paint that picture? You do it with words, but how do you structure that process?
I tend to find it's a lot clearer as a structure and approach when doing short stories rather than long ones. But generally, I'll have a particular concrete, solid image, which is something I call my in.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tend to start writing the story until I have the in. But once you've got it, and one of them in particular, I've got a short story that came out recently called Stowe. That's you might have seen in the news recently, there was a young man who amazingly survived stowing away in the wheel well of an aeroplane.
Oh, right.
And this is something a lot of people do, and not many people survive it. It
because it freezes people.
It's freezing. There's no oxygen. A lot of the doctors...
Two bad things.
Two bad things.
And then all these moving mechanical parts.
Yeah.
Rather unforgivingly pressing things together.
A lot of the doctors have just thrown their hands in the air and said, well, this person seems to have survived because they were young and flexible and their body went into a coma to protect them, which, you know, you can't plan for that.
No.
You can't pack your bags for coma. But I wrote this short story, Stowe, and my inn was seeing a piece of pavement, and I knew there was a woman standing over this piece of pavement. She was remembering when, as a child, a body had fallen from the sky. And for a time in her sort of small, quiet, perfect suburban street, this body had been quite a celebrity. You know, people came from across town to see it, until it became widely known that this person had fallen out of the wheel well of an aeroplane. They'd been a stowaway. And suddenly it was, you know, it was taboo to be talking about this body, because in this sort of quiet, perfect little urban environment, it wasn't done to say or think things might be better elsewhere. And the idea of someone being so desperate to escape their life that they would do something like that was, you know, it basically, after that became known, people started moving out of the houses, the neighbourhood became quite downgraded.
Oh, and wow.
So, yeah, the whole story sprang from this image of this woman standing here looking at this piece of pavement and remembering where the body fell from the sky.
That's an incredible. What a desperate journey that people must go on to put themselves through that risk.
Mm.
Yeah, and then the outcome is property values go down. It was an unexpected outcome of the whole process.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Today on Escape Pod, we're talking to BP Gregory. We've got a bit of a different take on travel. We're talking about journeys of the mind, and we're talking to author BP Gregory, who has how many books now?
I have three novels available, technically two novels and a novella, and a collection of short stories.
Okay. Now, you were telling me something hilarious off air when we were listening to the amazing track that we just listened to, which is Hey Pretty by Poe, Haunted. Mm, that was good. That was one you brought in. Two things. What was that track? Why was that track important to you?
Well, you might have noticed there's a voiceover in the track. This is a reading of Mark Danielowski's from his novel House of Leaves, which is one of these amazing, fabulous underground novels where the way you get your hands on it is you're at a party and it's 2 a.m. and you're thinking about going home, and then somebody slips you a dog-eared novel tied up with string and says, "Hey, really got to read this."
Was this a guest at the party?
No, it was someone I live with. It may have been a party of two. We like to call them
still
parties.
Still called a party.
But House of Leaves is just one of these incredibly amazing novels in its own right, and also a typesetter's nightmare. It has a format where eventually the text follows the progression of the story. So you have a character who's progressing through a house that is turning into a labyrinth, and eventually the text starts to reverse itself and run down the page and sort of turn into gigantic spirals that you've got to turn the book round and round to read. And people goggle at you on public transport like there's something wrong with you because you're turning your book upside down.
This is her first day at reading. Is that the kind of...
I went to university. I can read this book. But the song is from the album Haunted, which Mark's sister Poe released as a companion piece to the book.
Oh, okay.
Which is something that a
creative family.
Very creative family, very talented family. It's something that is becoming a lot more popular as we're moving into a more multimedia society is you don't just have words on the page. You have parties where you have performance pieces. You have friends do companion works, multimedia things. It's very popular to do book trailers now. So you make a film-like trailer for the book that is shot, even though there is not going to be a film. It is just to encourage more people who are more comfortable with a visual medium to then go and pick up the book and read it.
Wow. Okay. So you're also telling me something about your working process. We haven't had an email in, and we'll read that out in a minute. But you were telling me about your working process, and it is something that struck me as fascinating.
Well, yes, we were talking about characters, and I was explaining sometimes characters can go a little off the rails. In my latest book, Outer Man, I have two characters who, in the original bare bones script, had called for a very tender and moving love scene, which is not so much my specialty, I have to admit.
As a horror author.
As a horror science fiction humour writer, and, you know, that doesn't
it's
really...
more horror shag.
I do have some author
gnashing
friends...
Gnashing teeth.
I do have some lovely author friends who write erotica, and they write very sort of juicy, popular erotica. So I don't feel like I'm missing out not stepping into their territory, because I can always go over there and read theirs when I need it.
Yeah.
But I had these two characters who were supposed to share this uplifting moment that sort of... It underlined their humanity. And when I got to it, I found that they just loathed each other, and I could not... Like, you could barely get them into the same room. And eventually the only way I had to get these two characters into bed together was to get them hopelessly, hopelessly drunk.
So you've fabricated these people. They're completely fictional characters, and you struggle to get them to like each other.
You might find that with a lot of writers, their characters, once they become more fully realised, also become, in a sense, independent creations. If you can't believe them doing something, your reader's not going to believe them doing something either.
So you actually create friends in your mind as sort. It's like,
it's sort of like Grown Up Sims.
Yeah, or Milko for Home and Away. It's Sally's Milko.
It's completely safe and normal to do it as a writer.
As a writer. So you preface a lot of comments with, as a writer.
Oh, God, no. It's a party killer, that one. People come up to you at a party and say, can you tell me about your latest book?
Everyone hates each other and they're fighting in my head.
It ended with everyone in tears.
I had to get them drunk so they'd shag.
And it wasn't a small amount of alcohol either. It was alcohol that actually had to be shipped into, you know, the equivalent of space. This is a novel where there is no universe. There is no sun in the sky. The world is sort of encased in a shell.
Okay, talk about this, because this is the thing about your particular writing is science fiction and horror. Mm. You have to create the universe in which people have to step to journey through the book, right?
Yeah.
So how do you do this? Because it can't be a simple, oh, yeah, you just take for granted that we're in a shell on the top of a turtle.
Well, it's in Terry Pratchett references.
Yeah,
you had me at Terry Pratchett. Well, with this particular novel, for example, I find that the worlds you create have to be familiar and different. So you can't make it so completely alienating people can't picture themselves being there. There have to be a lot of familiar elements.
Mm-hmm.
With the world in Outerman, it's a world with no universe and no sun. And so I knew when I was starting.
How do they see things?
Well, the shell emits light, the shell that's surrounding the world. So they have dawn and they have dusk and they have
night. So it's like a hypercolor shell.
It's a hypercolor shell. Get some puffer paint on that, it'll be brilliant. But with this particular world, I went in knowing that the stars for us instill a very great sense of wonder and mystery. You know, we look up at the stars and it inspired, you know, religious thoughts. And so this is a world that actually has no God, because people never looked up at the stars and wondered. They never wondered about, you know, explanations for larger things. It's quite an enclosed, frightened society. They're afraid of what's out there rather than reaching for wonder. And going into creating this world, I also knew I was going in with a very limited palette, because there's a lot of words in the English language that have a root meaning or reference sun, stars and God. And I couldn't use any of them.
Right.
So, once you start...
So do you start making up words, like bleep blorp or something?
I try not to make up too many words. Made up words are more the prerogative of very serious fantasy writers. So they'll have entirely made up languages, and you'll quite often get a progression...
Dothraki.
Dothraki and their fabulous horses.
Yeah.
You'll quite often get a variety of people who have characters who are quite obviously elves and quite obviously orcs, but they give them other names because they like to rename things and claim them as their own. Or in some cases, not violate copyright.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm just respecting your idea by repurposing it.
Well, I've got
instead of stealing.
It's not stealing. It's a tribute.
A tribute.
Tribute in the parlance.
I'm just going to tribute some of your money.
I do actually have another limited palette one. I'm working on a novel at the moment, but the next one that I've got queued up, because I've got about 14 years worth of novels before I have to have an original straight off the bat idea that I need. But the one...
What does that mean?
Well, I've got all of these sort of baby chicken-the-egg concept novels that are just waiting to be expanded and developed. So I have a drawer full of them just waiting for me to get to them. Novelettes. Baby novelettes. You know, sort of open the drawer every now and again and throw in a handful of cheesels and shut it to keep them alive.
Right. So they're like Tamagotchis.
A little bit, yeah. And when they die, you sort of cry and have to be let out of class and your parents come and get you.
That's very bleak.
Well, that happened with the Tamagotchi craze. They got banned from schools because kids were playing with them in the class and the teachers confiscated them. And when their Tamagotchis died, it was a really big thing.
Mm. And that's when they started bringing guns into school, and we all know what happened then.
Yeah, it's when they gaffer tape the Tamagotchi to the gun, you know, there's a serious problem.
So you are a horror authoress.
It does tend to wander off into the horror path quite often, unfortunately, conversationally.
Mm.
But this novel that I've got coming up, I've got another limited palette one where it's a world that doesn't have any animals.
What do they eat?
People. So the whole world is...
Silent Green is people.
Silent Green is people. God, I love that film so much.
Yeah, it's goody.
So it's a world where all of the roles that are traditionally filled by animals are filled by people who have been sculpted to fill that role. So they don't have any concept of what an animal is. So this is a bit difficult in world creation, where you can't just stand up at the front and say, I'm Basil Exposition and this is what the world is. Because when you're a person in a world, you don't tend to think this is my world and we do this and then we do this and this is like this, because you're immersed in it, you don't directly think about it at all. So usually what I tend to do, and some people agree with it and some people don't, I'll generally drop my reader into the middle of the world and they will find out through incidental information, because the characters aren't going to stand there and yell what's going on at them, because the characters don't care. To the characters, this is a normal, natural part of their world.
So right, you don't go around paraphrasing every action you do every day just so that people understand why you're doing it.
Although, if you do that, try and do it in a British accent, because it does sound so much nicer.
Oh, does it?
but yeah, it's some people find it a little bit confusing, but I find it a necessary subtlety, is that you can't just tell people why this world is different or what's going on, because you're living it through the characters and the characters don't think it's unusual.
Right. So this is the interesting mind journey you take people on, because you've got to introduce them to something completely out of that you've created. So you're the only one, by the time pen was hitting paper, you're the only one that's ever come up with this, unless you've stolen it. Or
Tributed it.
So you've created this thing. So the reader is then being mentally and imaginatively transported. How do you find getting to that process? Is it something that you can do quite quickly, or is it something that you have to? You mentioned before redrafting. Is it something that comes out, or in reading it, or getting someone else to read through it, they'll just go, "What's going on? I don't get the context." How does it work?
In travel terms, it's quite similar to exploring a foreign city. You know, you might make your initial forays a couple of streets away from where you're staying. It's like, I'll just go around the block and see what I can find. And you might find a cafe and you sit down there and hear what the people are talking about. And then you might go on a slightly bigger block and you find a museum and you find out a little bit more about what's going on. So it is a process of gradual increments where when you're in a foreign environment or somewhere that's strange or unusual to you, you tend to feel a little bit threatened and a little bit afraid. You don't tend to just jumps, unless you're some sort of fabulous crazed extrovert, in which case, good on you. but a lot of people tend to approach foreign environments, you know, tentatively. You wait for part of the environment to come to you as well. You wait to be charmed by this environment, this foreign land that you've just found yourself in.
And then you reason with it.
You tie bits of your own experience to things that are familiar to you. And basically, I like to treat my reader the same way. I think I'm taking them into a foreign place. I shouldn't frighten them or force it on them. I should walk them through the streets and show them these different experiences that they can enjoy.
Picture this. You're a 15-year-old alone in your bedroom. You're questioning your sexuality and you don't know who to turn to. You turn on the radio and for the first time, you hear a voice talking about how wonderful it is to be part of the LGBTIQ community. And suddenly, you don't feel alone anymore. Joy 94.9 connects, represents, and celebrates our diverse community on radio, online, and streaming via the Joy app. No matter where you are right now, become a member or donate for Joy's 2014 Radiothon. Head to joy.org.au and click on the membership tab. That's so Joy, 2014 Radiothon. Help support the radio station that supports our global LGBTIQ community.
That's so Joy!
We were just up in the Joy helicopter while we were listening to Tori Amos. Why is that track important to you?
I'm quite fond of this Tori Amos track particularly. It reminds me of all the little narratives that we create when we have just day-to-day interactions with people and people that you've known for a period of time. You sort of build up a nice little story and a narrative in your head about what your relationship is to this person or what your encounter was like. A very small version of that is if you've ever had an encounter with someone in public, say someone pushed past you on the tram, and in your head you create this grand elaborate fiction of how you got back at them and you were really witty and everyone applauded you and they felt so ashamed of their behaviour, which is not how it works in real life, obviously.
No, you just press those feelings deeper and deeper.
I would like to have a big shout out until one day you're a writer and you write about it, that will show them.
Yeah, when they read this. So if you're listening and you've just tuned in to Joy 94.9 today here on Escape Pod, I'm talking to Bronwyn, who is BP Gregory, the author, who has several books out, and she creates a mind journey, and that's what we're talking about today on Escape Pod. So Bronwyn has been talking about how she goes about the process, and sometimes she has to get her characters drunk to shag because they just don't like each other, and lots of different things. You were talking about the world you have to create and how you have to describe people to take them on figuratively a journey in their mind, because they're living in a shell on the back of a tortoise. or something.
Oh, it's a world inside a shell. I'm not quite up to a Terry Pratchett
with
level
no sun.
Where I can involve tortoises.
But no sun.
No sun, no universe. It is a claustrophobic, self-contained world. And
I imagine everyone would be quite peaked and sort of, they would have a grey pallor.
Well, you get UV radiation from the shell, but the people who exist within this world are... They're quite afraid of what's outside of the shell, and you have little quirks, like when people step out onto the street, they look up. Just a little unconscious look up. It's the way when if you're going to cross the road, you look one way or the other to look for an oncoming vehicle. They look up because they're just afraid of what might possibly be up there or out there.
Oh. Bronwyn, how can people get your books?
Well, you could visit my website for the store, www.popgoesthebrainstem.com.
So that's www.popgoesthebrainstem.com. How'd you get that?
Well, I actually had a brainstorming session with my partner, and we were just basically running around the apartment yelling out random nonsensical phrases.
Oh, good idea.
And then getting on Google to see if anyone else has used it before. So we got
through... Oh, I love the Google machine.
We got through 8 or 9 until we finally came up with one. It's like, well, you know, it's fun. It's a bit nonsensical because when I say I write horror and science fiction, it's not all doom and gloom.
Oh, okay. Talk about fun horror then.
Horror is a lovely universal genre because aside from a few select people, everyone's been afraid at one point or another.
Oh.
Even people who don't like being afraid can quite connect with a horror story because they know what it's like.
Mm.
I originally got into it because I'm quite a chronic nightmare sufferer.
Oh.
And I find when I'm reading horror or when I'm like watching a horror film, it's horror with rules and therefore it's safe horror. It's something that is contained. Like you know, horror films have rules. Things like don't solve puzzle boxes that open portals to hell.
If there are invaders in your house, you must run upstairs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, that this is a world that makes sense with rules. So it is controlled and contained and therefore you know that there are things you could do or that there is a finish to it. Whereas when you have bad dreams, they can feel quite uncontrollable. I do remember as a very young child and a nightmare sufferer, I'd spent 3 nights without going to bed. I'd actually snuck out of bed and I was just wandering around and around the table in the dining room trying to stay awake. And my dad came out and caught me. Dads tend to be quite savvy about this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And he said...
Just filled you full of whiskey?
Yeah, well, what are you doing? I said, oh, I had a bad dream. I'm afraid of having another bad dream. And he said, tell you what, honey... I'm giving you a dream sword. And in your dreams, you can use your dream sword to defend yourself. And next night, there I am going around and around the table again. And he came out and he said, what are you doing? Said, Dad, dream swords are crap. Dream swords don't do anything. Okay, here's an actual knife. Put this knife next to your bed and you'll be fine. And I do actually still have the knife that my dad gave me.
Oh, wow.
It's not sharp. You know, he's not completely crazy.
No, like a butter knife or something.
But it's a lovely practical approach to, okay, you've got this sense that there is a thing that is terrifying you that has no boundaries and is uncontrollable.
Mm.
Let's bring it back within rules. This is something that can be contained and can be explained. And I think that is something that really drives people to want to write as well, is they want to take something that can sometimes feel overwhelming and put it within a context of rules and help other people experience it in a way that's not threatening and not overwhelming.
Mm. Okay, so you go through the process, you write your books, you get your books published, people read them, and they give you feedback.
Yes.
What kind of people are giving feedback? I mean, because I'm sure that it's one in, you know, it's a percentage of people who will. So what kind of feedback does an author get? Because everybody is a keyboard warrior these days. Everybody's got an opinion.
Well, it tends to be quite difficult to get feedback insofar as when somebody likes something, they tend to enjoy the experience and then just have that quiet, inward, happy glow of enjoying it. They're not so motivated to go out as someone who hated something. If someone doesn't like something, they'll, oh my God, I have to tell the world how terrible it is. And people don't tend to distinguish between disliking something because it wasn't their sort of thing. They just equate disliking something with, therefore, it must obviously be bad.
Mm.
I particularly love it when I get 2 reviews right next to each other on a page, one of which is incredibly positive and one of which is, you know, incredibly negative, because then I think it's like Thunderdome. Right, we put them both in a cage and they have to fight out to find out
to
what the
death.
Opinion is. But when I review other people's stories, I try to be very specific in that I only post reviews about things that I loved because I loved it and I want other people to read it.
Mm.
If I didn't like it, quite often it's because it just wasn't my sort of thing. And also, who am I to be impacting someone else's sales by saying I didn't like this when someone else might read it and think it was, oh, the best thing ever?
Awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce.
Mm. Okay, and the kind of people that you've got, obviously horror fans and sci-fi fans, are they different to other people? Because when... Yeah, I can see you laughing, so you've got an answer for this.
We're all a little bit weird on the inside.
Right.
A lot of the people who like my stories come from a wide variety of backgrounds, because at the end of the day, the stories aren't about sci-fi or horror. They are literally about people. So the people in my stories are usually quite... They can be quite flawed, they can be quite tragic, but they're also very funny. And even though they're going through quite intense, bleak situations, they're doing what all of us do when that happens, is they're still finding the bright points. They're still finding moments in the journey that are funny, or moments in the journey that are lovely. And the point of a lot of the stories is that even though this thing has happened and maybe the outcome wasn't that positive, the journey itself was interesting and fun and had little points of joy in it. So it's a little bit more like real life insofar as you have to bring happiness to a situation. You're not necessarily going to be handed it on a silver platter.
Mm. Okay.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9. I'm talking to Bronwyn Gregory, who is BP Gregory, the authoress, today here on Escape Pod. We've been talking about journeys of the mind and how an author creates that space. And reading is one of those things that we do when we're on the way, when we're travelling, whether it be commuting, which a lot of people do, Kindle, iPhone, however they want to do it. And sometimes these paperback kind of organic looking things that I've seen people leaf through frequently. And how do you consume your because I'm assuming that as a writer you read a lot too.
I'm a voracious consumer of content, and the ebook revolution has only made my obsession greater. Well, I can now access content really cheaply and a lot of it. I'm actually finding there was a lot of hoo-ha when the ebooks came out saying, oh, they're so much cheaper than paper books, it'll be the end of the publishing industry. But I'm working on the assumption that there are probably people out there like me who are consumers like me. I can now get my hands on 5 or 6 novels a week. I'm spending a far greater percentage of my income on just buying books. Mm-hmm. In fact,
do you read through them that quickly?
Oh, yes.
How long does it take you to get through a novel?
About a 400-page novel I could knock over in, if it's a working week and I'm going to my day job, it'll probably take me 2 or 3 days.
So how much of your time do you wake up in the morning, read for an hour, get ready, go to work, read on the way to work? Is that how you structure your day?
There's a lot of reading when I get home and before bed. And like most households, we have a nice stack of books right next to the toilet. So there's a lot of reading in the bathroom to be done.
Oh, okay.
Good leisure time there.
Mm. Leisure.
It's one of those things where if you love something, you just find yourself stuffing it into all the little nooks and crannies in your day. But I also love print books. The difference I find in how I'm consuming content now is if you download an ebook and say it's, you know, $3 and it's crap, you're like, oh, well, I just blew $3.
Oh, shift delete, done.
Yeah, whatever. Whereas in the old days, if you'd spent $24 on a print book and it was terrible, you're like, oh, that's so disappointing. That's $24 gone. But now when I get an ebook that's something absolutely incredible, I think, right, I have to find an absolutely amazing, incredible print copy of this, and it will live on my coffee table and I can pass it around to all of my friends. And, you know, I'm always more willing for a print book that I know is good to pay more money for an amazing copy of it.
We've had some listener feedback. One of them says, BP Gregory tends to flesh out the rules of her words before the characters or the plot. The characters then must conform to those rules. Outer Men has very complex rules which cause her characters no end of problems. That's a comment more than a anything else. It's by a mystery person who...
Mystery reader number 161.
Yeah, mystery reader number 161, whose name does pop up on the email when it comes up on the screen that we can all access. So thank you, Aaron Morris. Still keep quiet, it's me. There's another email in. How many books does BP read in a month?
Oh, in a month I could easily churn through, I think, 10 or 12 novels, depending on their length. Mm. Once again, it depends on how much real life is intruding on my ability to sit around.
Because you recently got married, so that would have been a distraction.
Yeah, I know. Well, we went on a honeymoon afterwards, and most of
that
was...
Was it a reading honeymoon?
It was a reading honeymoon. It was lying around on the couch with cheese and wine reading and just generally hanging out and relaxing.
Nice. Actually, Aaron has sent in a really two really good questions. That, thank you, Aaron, for making my life easier. Firstly, were you a writer first or were you a reader first? You mentioned that your first book was when you were 14.
That is a bit chicken and the egg, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you had to learn to read, I know. So,
well, I was always read to as a very young child. So before I could read myself, my parents both read to us quite extensively, and they tended not to read children's books. So we had a bit of an accelerated education.
So what, like The Joyous Sex or something?
No, no, my dad used to read The Silmarillion to me, which is really quite dense and quite meaty and difficult to get your teeth into, but also has this wonderful advanced lyricism to it as well. Mm. And so I think I read Lord of the Rings on my own at the age of 6.
Really?
So I was a really early reader, and I'm actually quite pleased to see that my niece is following in my footsteps in that she is a incredibly advanced reader and a writer in her own right. She has written and her mother has had published for a book about a friend of hers who's been quite unwell. Oh, you've got me now.
Teens? Tweens?
No. This is kindergarten, primary school age. So she's incredibly talented and an early starter. And you know, reading to kids is never a bad thing.
No, absolutely not.
If I could work out a way to simultaneously write and read, I'm pretty sure my life would be absolutely complete. Everything I need would just be all together in the one package.
Nice. Another really good question from Aaron. Thank you again, Aaron. To journey or to create a journey? That's an interesting point. We were discussing this more off air before. Mm-hmm. The reason why we're talking to you as an author today is because, I mean, Escape Pod is a travel show, but we're not about, oh, look at this picture of a church. It's not an audio slideshow. We talk about the journeys that we all make. And
yes. And
you create those journeys for people to take. It's a really interesting way that he's phrased it. To journey or to create a journey? How do you perceive that?
Well, as I've said, people bring a lot of their own things to content. But one of the things I find most important about reading is that, say you can't afford to go on a holiday, but there is nothing constraining your mind going anywhere you want. And there's actually quite a nice theory put forward in a novel called Blindsight by Peter Watts, who's a very talented writer, in that he proposed that self-awareness is a failure of evolution. Being self-aware is very recursive. So we spend a lot of time worrying about how we're feeling or how we should be feeling or what we're thinking or what we should be thinking. I find that reading tends to allow you to go on holiday from being yourself for a short period of time as well. So you can read a book and you can experience what it is like to be a different type of a person or to be in a completely exotic place, especially places that either you know you could never really afford to go or have a full experience there, or places that are not accessible, like if you wish to travel to the past or you wish to travel to the future. These are all
places... Or to the shell planet.
The shell planet. These are all places that, you know, you're not constrained physically. Your mind can go anywhere that you want it to be. And good writers like to take people to these places and basically show them this is what it's like to be here. This is what it's like to be this type of person and feel this sort of thing. And it's especially valuable, I think, because we live in a very much culture of the personality society at the moment.
Kim Kardashian.
Well,
not a reader.
Like all major social trends, it is great for a few people, but not for everybody. Like for the rest of us, we're not all supermodels who have famous Twitter accounts. We're not all
these, no, we're not.
As much as people like to shout out on all of their social media that they are these things and they are that things, some of us, you know, I'm an ordinary person. Some of us are just ordinary. But you can read a book and feel what it's like to have this incredibly tempestuous, passionate relationship. Slash fiction is particularly popular amongst some very...
Eli Roth kind of stuff.
Well, slash fiction, erotic slash fiction.
Taking
two characters...
So slash and pash.
Well, the most famous and original slash fiction is the Kirk slash Spock sci-fi.
What?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Do you have an education in front of you, young man?
I know nothing of this world of which you speak. How does it work?
Well, it's a big fan-based community. So basically you take unlikely pairings from, or, you know, obvious unlikely pairings that just never made out in the text. And these fan fiction writers will then write incredibly hot, raunchy, passionate relationships and basically live out all of the emotions that they want to experience themselves but invested in these characters. And it's really quite popular with some odd demographics. I remember we were studying it at university and the Kirk slash Spock hot, sexy fan fiction is very popular amongst white middle-class housewives.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's the biggest demographic of reading and writing them is these people who, you know, just want to experience briefly what it is like to be somebody else.
That's all fascinating.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
BP Gregory, or Thress and Mind Traveller, let us know what your travel tips are.
I would say when travelling, never leave a moment to dull boredom. You can take an e-reader, you can take hundreds and hundreds of books, but when you're accessing content overseas, firstly, remember to always use a free Wi-Fi network.
Good.
Because, you know, none of us love getting that $4,000 phone bill when we get home.
No.
But always be aware as well, you're connecting to a network, so stay safe. Always make sure you're connecting to a clean network, somewhere where you know that there's not someone tapping away scurrilously on a keyboard at the other end and accessing your device.
That's it, kids. Always use protection.
Always keep it safe.
And we've had a... Marg, thank you very much for your message. Your guest has described my own reading experiences. Thanks. Really appreciate your message, Marg.
Oh, thank you.
Are you a Joy member? If you're not, you can always phone us on 1300 JOY 949. We'll be glad to take your money, Marg. Thank you very much for listening today on Escape Pod. Bronwyn, thank you very much for joining in.
It's Radiothon Week.
That's so Joy.
It's our annual membership drive and we're calling on you to keep Joy out loud and proud.
Did you know it costs around $4,000 a day to keep this thing going?
Sign up or renew your Joy membership right now. Get great radio, uplifting music and ensure a GLBTI voice on your radio, smartphone, streaming online and on social.
It also means Joy can be where your community is with live broadcasts from Mardi Gras, Chill Out, Pride March and this year the first ever 5-day long live broadcast from AIDS 2014, coming to Melbourne this July.
Call 1300-JOY-949 now. That's 1300-569-949 or visit joy.org.au. Thanks to our Radiothon prize supporters, Lord Coconut.
Melbourne's only retailer, gallery and online boutique selling handcrafted contemporary jewellery designed exclusively for men.
Henry Bucks.
Australia's premier menswear emporium with contemporary curated collections never before seen in Australia.
Focus Agenda.
Visit focusmelbourne.com.au.
Oscar Hunt.
Melbourne's finest made-to-measure tailors creating quality men's suits, shirts and overcoats.
Styled by Sally.
Men's style consultant, Melbourne.
Grange Bellinzona.
Book your relaxing spa break with us. For more details, visit grangecc.com.au or call us on 5348 2271.
Call 1300 569 949 or joy.org.au.
Your voice, your community, your radio. Thank you for your support.
That's so Joy. Radiothon 2014.
Joy! Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.